Now on Radio 4, David Baddiel presents a new series of Heresy. Among other subjects, the programme asks whether political correctness has gone too far, and it includes some offensive language which was once deemed acceptable by many people.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Hello and welcome to the first in a new series of Heresy, the discussion programme that slaps an asbo on all forms of received opinion. Joining me tonight, a panel of breathtakingly original thinkers who include, first, a woman I'd describe as a cultural giant, if it weren't for the fact that the word giant has overtly masculine connotations and giantess just sounds like a woman with an enormous head. So instead I'll refer to her as that clever little sex kitten, Germaine Greer. Second, arguably the best stand-up comedian working in Britain today. Okay, some would say Dylan Moran, others Daniel Kitson, but for my money, it's definitely a toss-up between them and Stuart Lee. And lastly, the greatest character comedian of his generation, star of Saturday Live, Harry Enfield and Chums, Kevin and Perry Go Large, and most recently, of course, Ruddy Hell, two old blokes get the chance to do sketches with a lot of pretty young actresses. It's Harry Enfield. Which leads very neatly into our first received opinion. When did you first Thank you, Jarvis. Yes, we're talking about ageing, and specifically male ageing, or more specifically still, men in middle age who think that getting their hands on a new car and a newer woman will regain their lost youth. Not true of all men. Some settle for a radical new haircut, some take up jogging, and David Guest opted for so much surgery he now resembles something that should be hanging off the side of a church. The cliché suggests that all men past the age of 40 long to make it with a model and own a Porsche, although, of course, the truth remains that most men of that age just end up making a model of a Porsche in their shed. Cliché or not, 70% of this audience agreed with the statement that men who deal with midlife crisis by buying a flash car and going off with much younger women are pathetic. Harry, I'm going to come to you first, and for a specific reason, actually, which is there was a sketch on your show the other day, written, I think, by Laura Solon, but nonetheless, in which
she's one of the pretty young girls.
She is one of the pretty young girls, in which you played a 54-year-old man going out with a 24-year-old woman.
Yes.
And I would say, I have to say, it fitted in more or less exactly with the myth, with the cliche.
She's 24.
Yes, it was
As in 2-4. But no, I think it's a noble thing to leave your wife and go off and buy a Porsche.
Yes.
In fact, I've got a very good advertising campaign for them. I'd like to see billboards everywhere with a wife and two children looking unhappy. And the chap, the old man, driving away in an open-top Porsche with his new bird kind of waving a little bit. And they're crying with the caption, "My marriage was a lie. Porsche is the truth."
That's brilliant, I think. Can I suggest, though, that there is something not exactly noble, but maybe tragic rather than pathetic about these men, because it's surely their fear of death that makes them want to do this. I mean, I'm thinking, well, I should have a Porsche, because the next thing I'll be driving is a Stannah stairlift quite soon.
But is that pathetic to fear death? I mean, we all fear death in our way, don't we? But some of us fear death after 20 years of living with the same old trout.
Yes, yes.
And some of us...
That's led to people hissing in the audience. Well, I'm starting to wonder if there are trout in the audience.
There's a trout right here.
Ah, well, yes.
I'm here to represent trout.
Trout. Perhaps I should go. I'll go now to Germaine Greer, because she has got a round of applause for saying I am trout, which has only ever happened before on the shipping forecast on Radio 4.
So, now, look, there's a thing about Porsches that you don't understand, which is that they are built for people with low back pain. Right. And that's why they're driven by hairdressers and gynecologists.
Is that right?
Have you not noticed that?
Entry-level
Porsche is driven by the hairdresser, who's been standing, so hence the low back pain. And the gynecologist's life is just too awful to describe. So I don't feel...
I've always quite fancied it, obviously, but that's perhaps foolish of me.
Well, I think if you were actually yodeling in the canyon, you probably wouldn't. It's because
that's
you...
a travel programme. How did that happen?
Yes. It's because you've never been there. I don't really resent men's dreams of being able to escape from domesticity, just as long as we can stop them doing it, actually.
But I'm going to have to point something out, which is that you were married for 3 weeks. Is that not true?
Three weekends would
be
more
accurate. 3 weekends, right. And you were unfaithful 7 times within 3 weeks. So, no, I think... Good luck to you, I think, but...
But it was only 7 in 21 days. I think you're being a bit of a wowser.
No, I have no problem with that.
Was this in the 1960s when everything was different?
Yeah. Yeah. Can I come to Stuart on this? Because you've just got married, haven't you?
Yeah, well, last year. I mean, I kind of was confused by this question, because most of the people I know are kind of self-employed or unemployed kind of losers and wastrels who've never kind of done anything for 20 years. And by the time they get to 40, they have the opposite of this kind of midlife crisis where you go off with a younger woman in a Porsche and you actually kind of get married to someone your own age and have a child. And that is how the midlife crisis manifests itself for most people I know. I think it's actually wanting...
So security. Your marriage was because you had a midlife crisis, is what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. Certainly not on air. No, but I'm just saying it's...
What comes first, the Porsche
well, that's the
or
point.
The divorce?
Do you think these men are so desperate to get away from their wives, they have to buy the fastest car they can to get a very long way away? I always think that the thing that is the most extraordinary example of the fact that men, particularly well-known men, will tend to leave their wives to pass this new, is the fact that Stephen Hawking did it. Stephen Hawking ran off with another woman, and he can't, of course, run.
He
right?
did.
He can't run. Yeah, and he presumably just left her in a much faster wheelchair. I don't know. But, you know, that it seems extraordinary that he
yes,
even managed
you
to do that.
Are chucked.
Yeah,
that was
exactly.
it.
How did he chat up the other one?
Yeah.
You don't sweat much for a fat bird. You know, it seems very unlikely to me, but it happened.
I went out on a date with a woman once who was 6 years younger than me.
Ding dong.
And she was very nice. But I just found the whole cultural frame of reference was unworkable.
6 years?
Yeah.
Really? What was it that she didn't know about?
Some stuff from the mid-70s she didn't know about. And the flashing blade, she didn't remember that.
No.
Remember
really?
That?
Or Chicory
Tick. I don't remember that.
We can't go out together.
Let's forget it. Okay. No. Anyway, let's go to the audience on that note. Are there any people in here with direct experience of this? I mean, is there anyone here who's been left in this way, or anyone who has just done this and wants to talk about it?
There's a lady waving her.
You left
finger.
Your partner.
Perhaps we could speak to this. Have you left your partner, or were you left?
No, I left my partner.
Right. Did you leave your partner for a much younger man? For the man who's standing next to you, who. Looks, yeah. I can't tell in this light how old he is. How old are you, sir?
25.
Oh, blimey. And do you mind me asking how old you are?
No, I'm 45.
That's brilliant.
Good on you!
Excellent.
I don't want to be pessimistic here, but in my experience from the 6-year gap, that is not going to work.
Yeah, but what I like about it is it's a bit like the Jeremy Kyle show now. It's like we've got people talking about their relationships and their
abilities. It's like the Jeremy Kyle show, but with Jermaine Greer on it,
yes,
which
right.
would never happen.
Which would never happen. So that's brilliant, because one of the things I was going to bring out... Hang on, one of the things... That, well, it's interesting we're saying it's brilliant, because one of the things that people seem to think now, culturally, is for women to do this, like, say, Madonna or Demi Moore or people like that, it's kind of brilliant, because it's redrawing the map of what's acceptable sexually and stuff like that, whereas men are pathetic doing it. So tell me how this happened, briefly.
Yeah.
Did you leave your husband?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I met my partner at work. And then
yes.
Were you a teacher?
please. At least a university lecturer. Come on. And what about your ex-husband?
He's very happy and we're very good friends.
Well, that's a fabulously happy, good way to end off this discussion. Thank you very much. So remember...
Still wrong, though.
Still wrong. Yeah. Let's move on, please, to the next received opinion. Carl Orr Rolf's Carmina Burana there, his extraordinary polyphonic cantata, which always inspires in the listener an intense and passionate desire to rush out and buy some Old Spice. Yes, we're talking about classical music, and we're going to try and fight the received opinion that to appreciate it, you have to be either old or posh or Inspector Morse. Well, 56% of this audience agreed with the statement, classical music and opera is elitist. Stuart?
I remember going to the English National Opera a few years ago, and at the time I was working on Jerry Springer, the opera. And I went into ENO, and they spend a lot of money at ENO on trying to work out how to connect opera with the people and why are we viewed as elitist, etc., etc., etc. And ENO is the only publicly funded arts venue I've ever been to where the programmes are mainly full of adverts for butlers and servants.
Oh, really?
Right. And that probably tells you part of what the problem is. It's yes. Not that classical music and opera is in of itself elitist. It's just that the infrastructure surrounding it is somehow become exclusive.
Can and I just say, just in case people don't realise, ENO is not the people who did Mr. Blue Sky.
No,
that's
not,
something
no, no.
quite different.
English National Opera. Part of the problem about why classical music and opera are viewed as elitist, I think, is because there's a fear in the world today of having an open and honest discussion about how some forms of art are clearly inherently better than others. What made me think about this? So I was in Florence last year and I was reading Kenneth Clark's Civilization. And there's a very funny paragraph in it where he says, you know, we can go into an ethnographic museum and look at an African mask from the African plains, and we can go into blah, blah, and look at Michelangelo's David. Some would say that the African mask is as valuable as this piece of European Renaissance art, but it isn't. Michelangelo's David is clearly better. Yeah. But I think that it's a kind of really mad, provocative thing to say, but I kind of think we have to find a way of making people reconnect with classical music and opera and make them realise that it isn't the music that's alienating, but the kind of cultural faff that surrounds it.
Harry, you did a show, didn't you, quite a while ago about classical music and opera, didn't
yes.
you, on telly?
I did a programme on opera for Channel 4 a few years, sort of just before Classic FM, I think it was.
Right.
And it was great fun to do, and we went all around the world. And, of course, it's not culturally elitist in Italy and places, because a lot of operas are written in Italian. I don't really like opera in English. You know, our words end with D's and things like that, and theirs all end with farfalla and things like that. And we say butterfly. And they go, fa-falla. And you can sing, fa-falla. And you sing, butterfly. You know, it kind of doesn't work as well. Worse in German, of course, where it's Schmetterling.
Is that the German for butterfly?
Yes.
Really?
It's Schmetterling. Schmetterling, yes.
Oh. And what does that mean, broken down?
It means
butterfly.
We did most, but just to prove the point, Classic FM, when it started, everyone thought, oh, there'll be no market for this, there's Radio 3, and that's elitist enough as it is. But actually, it's a massive market. It's huge, and they all became immensely rich, these people who started this thing. Everybody listens to it. Or...
Hang on, I want Jermaine to come in.
Jermaine.
I've been listening somewhat bewildered. You've been talking about the same handful of operas, really, Italian opera. You would think that Wagner had not yet been dreamt of. And you've lumped in
remember,
classic...
David's Jewish. He's
yes.
not going to enjoy that.
Well, it's a good point, though, about Wagner, because Wagner was, of course, liked very much by Hitler, who was essentially a bit of an elitist, wasn't he, Hitler? I mean, he had a definite concept that some people were more important than others.
He was a house painter.
Yes, lots not of just that.
Lots of house painters are demented racists.
Are they? I'm having my house decorated at the moment, and apart from the yellow star that they've painted on the wall, I haven't really noticed anything.
I'm trying... Look, if the aria from Turandot can be the theme song for the European Cup, we're obviously talking nonsense, if we say...
The World Cup.
The World Cup, sorry. Yeah. The World Cup.
It's all right, you're a bird, so you don't know about
I am not a bird.
This is Ness and Torbert.
I'm a human. I am a human.
Yeah. Well, that sounded a bit like John Merrick, the way you said that. If you said being, it would have been very
In any case, I mean, the thing we all love about opera is it's incredibly vulgar.
Right.
It's just that it's only in this country that it gets dressed up as something tremendously highfalutin, which I don't get.
Can I come back to Harry to talk about Classic FM? Because, of course, smashy and nicey characters that you did, brilliantly funny DJ characters, though all that lot kind of went off to Classic FM, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
You know, suddenly Simon Bates was saying, well, now it's time for Beethoven, wasn't it?
Yeah, quite literally, down in the charts this week, kids, batty old Beethoven.
Yeah, yeah.
Up in the charts again, goes mad Mozart. They do all that.
That's all I really wanted was you doing that. I just wanted to hear it, really. But normally, I always argue against the received opinion, but this one I have a personal problem with, because when I was a kid, my parents, who were kind of lower middle class Jews, desperately aspirant, the thing they sort of put their faith in was classical music. So they watched Face the Music, like a whole generation of people. They made me play classical piano, and they made me go to Mr. Field's house, who was my piano teacher. Now, I'm not saying anything about Mr. Field, if he's still out there, but he used to come down in a kimono, right? Absolutely true. He lived with his mother and her friend, and this is completely true. He used to spend an hour saying to me, what you need is a limper wrist. That's absolutely true. He used to say, you need to relax it more, David, relax it more. And after a while, I got frightened of him. And that's why I don't like classical music.
But surely you can see that your hostility towards classical music is a personal thing to you.
Yeah.
I think the problem is there's stuff out there, like lots and lots of jazz and lots of experimental music and lots of classical music, where you need to kind of learn the rules a bit. You might need someone to kind of hold your hand a little bit, like your piano
like
teacher.
Mr. Field.
Go, here's how it works, here's what this means, and suddenly the whole thing opens up to you. There was a time when that was the kind of job of publicly funded broadcasting, and it's the dereliction of its duty has meant that isn't happening anymore. And
but it does happen with Classic FM. They say, this song is about this, this is what they're doing, and here it is.
Yeah.
And they just play they play nice tunes.
Yeah, but what's
wrong with nice tunes?
They play music to relax to. Yeah. They burbling on about relaxation. It sounds as if they're going to bury you.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, when I listen to Classic FM, what I basically think is that I am on hold. I think any minute now they'll put me through to my financial advisor. Any minute now. So that's the problem with it. I think we need to go to the audience. We've got a guy called Brian Russell. So you strongly think it is indeed an elitist form?
Purely for the language side of things.
Right.
Not being able to speak, well, even proper English. I find speaking other languages very elitist.
No, but let me explain something. That when operas have been performed in English, they're so hard to understand because of the distortions of the vowel sounds by the requirements of the voice that they've needed subtitles for them too. But look, there's something else as well. A singer like Pavarotti used to make every vowel sound.
We would have got it if you said Pavarotti.
One of the things about Pavarotti is when he sings, the performance is set in stone. It's taken him years to work out exactly how he's going to sing something.
And it's taken him years to get to the stage. He has to go on a little golf cart.
Yeah.
That's not funny. It's not his fault he's got arthritic knees. I'm surprised.
I think it is his fault. I think if you're...
No,
if you've eaten
a hundredweight
of pasta every day, you're going to get arthritic knees.
Look, that's not even true.
Is that not true?
No, his knees were destroyed playing football, if you really want to know.
I think we've got to move on. Can we have the final received opinion to go under the microscope of original thought today?
Can you tell us why you think the phrase couch potato is degrading to potatoes?
Well, obviously, as I'm sure you're familiar with the phrase from the OED, it talks about people sitting around doing very little, watching too much television, when in fact, of course, potatoes are the absolute opposite of this, packed full of energy and many nutrients.
Yeah, that was... That is Jennifer John from the British Potato Council. We are discussing whether or not PC has gone mad, which, by the way, is political correctness gone mad, and not PC gone mad, as in when that Brazilian guy was shot on the tube. But does mad political correctness really exist, or is it a bogus phenomenon invented by the tabloid press, like Freddie Starr's digested hamster or Colleen McLaughlin's career? Well, 84% of this audience agreed, 84%, which is quite a lot, but agreed that political correctness has gone mad. Although I should say, before anyone complains, that what we actually mean is that political correctness has gone alternatively sane. Jermaine Greer.
Well, of course I disagree with this, because political correctness always was mad. I think people have forgotten where it came from. I mean, it came from the kind of linguistic control that was exerted by the Soviets and then by the Nazis. And the next thing we hear is that when we object to insulting expressions, that we're applying the same system. But it was like that from the beginning. It hasn't got that way. It was always like that. It's always a way to shut people up. We don't want to shut people up, do we? We want them to talk,
yes.
Don't we?
I'm going to have to shut you up here, just in this particular case, but don't take that the wrong way. Harry, actually, but Jermaine raised a point there, which is probably most interesting for you because you've been around the longest in terms of comedy, which is that when you started doing comedy, and this is why I don't think political correctness has gone mad, it used to be much stricter, I think.
Oh, yes. When I started, there was no real scene. There were no clubs. The comedy store had closed down and there were five clubs and they were run by GLC, Ken Livingstone's Old London, and there was a little Politburo and you used to have to go and do your act to this literally five people. And if you didn't say Thatch, we hate Thatch, then you didn't get a gig, basically.
Right.
And me and
what
my
about people who were working on old houses? Did they say that?
Sorry, I don't know.
It's about
Thatch
Roofs. It's a pun on Thatch Roofs.
Sorry.
The audience got it, which is what I'm happy about. So you actually had to audition in front of a quango.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, there were five people. And they'd sit there all po-faced. And we were considered sort of almost neo-fascist for doing that.
For not saying
that. Well, now, you know, anyone says anything and they talk about... I mean, I think it's far more, I wouldn't say liberal, but there was a certain political correctness, certainly towards women, that now everyone goes, whoa, birds and lovely. And everyone goes, yeah, that's really funny and great.
That's all under the context of a kind of new irony, supposedly. Which, to some extent, you started with loads of money. Because with loads of money, I mean, it goes back to Alf Garnett and stuff like that, but that idea of a character who is saying things that are supposedly unsayable, but then is grown to be kind of championed and celebrated by the very people who you perhaps are satirising.
But, I mean, I don't think that was true. What loads of money did was go around and go, I'm rich and you're poor and ha ha ha. I don't think it became a kind of particular beacon kind of thing, but The Guardian certainly said I was so horrified that the working classes liked it that I killed it off.
Well, that was the story,
ridiculous.
That you killed it off.
And no,
my
ridiculous.
Producer was saying to me that you made him gay, which I don't remember.
No.
No, you didn't make him gay.
No.
Cool. Yeah.
You what?
You what?
Yeah. No, I didn't make him
just
gay.
Just do him gay. You won't. I'm just trying to get you to do some old characters.
Oh, loads of money. Yeah. No. It's Graham Norton, isn't it?
That's not the way I imagine. I imagine he's still got his
gay.
Old voice, but he says gay things. I'm workshopping it as a comedy idea.
Oh, I see, right.
Now he says, you know.
I'll tell you, I bummed this geezer the other day.
Exactly. That's what I was looking for. Can I come to you now, Stuart?
It really worries me that 84% of this audience agree with this statement, because the kind of people that say political correctness gone mad are usually using that phrase as a kind of cover action to attack minorities or people that they disagree with. I'm of an age where I can see the difference that political correctness has made. When I was 4 years old, my grandfather drove me around Birmingham, where the Tories had just fought an election campaign saying, if you want a nigger for a neighbour, vote Labour. And he drove me around saying, this is where all the coons and niggers and jungle bunnies live. And I remember being at school in the early 80s, and my teacher, when he read the register, instead of saying the name of the one Asian boy in the class, he would say, is the black spot in, right? And all these things have gradually been eroded by political correctness, which seems to me to be about a kind of institutionalized politeness at its worst. And if there is some fallout from this, which means that someone in an office might get in trouble one day for saying something that someone was a bit unsure about because they couldn't decide if it was sexist or homophobic or racist, it's a small price to pay for the massive benefits and improvements in the quality of life for millions of people that political correctness has made. It's a complete lie that allows the right, which basically controls media now and international politics, to make people on the left that are concerned about the way people are represented look like they're killjoys. And those 84% of you in this room that have agreed with this phrase, you're like those people that turn around and go, you know who the most oppressed minority in Britain today are? White, middle-class men. You're a bunch of idiots.
Oh, dear. I now feel that apart from the four people clapping, there's an edge of alienation in the audience. Anyway, Jermaine, you wanted to say something.
Well, you know, it's the... I was arguing from the way that the notion of political correctness and where the term actually comes from, that I think it's probably not the right way to approach just being sensitive about difference. You know, I don't know, if I call somebody a bitch, it's unkind. But if I call her a black bitch, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
Even though the obvious thing about her is that she's black. Mm. If somebody calls me Australian, I don't know how to react. Am I to be offended? Is it discriminatory? well, tough is all I can say.
I want to go to the audience. Okay. let's have some people responding to this. There's a guy called Trevor Dunton who didn't get to speak last time. He wanted to speak. Yes, Trevor.
Hello.
Hello. So how do you feel that PC has gone mad?
Yes. I think people should be okay about having their leg pulled. And I mean, I once designed a...
Not Heather Mills McCartney, are we?
No, sorry. Yeah, I once designed a Christmas card and I had the Virgin Mary in bed with the angel Gabriel having a post-coital fag. Hmm. And he was saying, yeah, see, I told you it'd be immaculate. And I got this vicar phoning me up, apoplectic with rage, saying I should give all the money to the church. And I said to him, look, you know, if your faith is so flimsy that you can't take a leg pull, what's it worth?
Are you going to mention the Muslim cartoons in a minute? Because I'm slightly frightened that you are about to. And that's
that bothers me. About those Muslim cartoons, again, that kind of got blown about. See, that cartoon, the one you've just described, it has a kind of working knowledge of exactly what the taboos of Christianity that it's exploding are, right? And their fear of kind of sexuality and the notion of exactly how was the Virgin Mary impregnated via the angel Gabriel from God, which is a clandestine theme of all Renaissance depictions of the Annunciation. So it's kind of, it has a sort of...
I don't believe for a second that was in Trevor Dunton's mind, but never mind. Has...
I know, you're glad that I got it, aren't you? But
I think health and safety's gone mad.
Do you?
Oh, well, definitely.
You know, that's what people now think of as political correctness. You can't do anything these days without the health and safety. And
I mean, there's a kind of confusion of the notion. Like, if you say, oh, I wasn't allowed to have a kettle on my desk at work because of health and safety rules, then your mum's friend will go, it's political correctness gone mad.
Yes,
well, it isn't. It's health and safety regulations. It's an entirely different thing.
Can I just tell you a joke?
Yes.
So I did it the other night at this charity gig, and I got a bit of stick for it afterwards, I'll tell you. And the joke was, basically, I made a few jokes. It was a lot of very, very rich people I wanted to give money, so I made some jokes about Gordon Brown, which went down very well. And then at the end I said, but I'm probably going to vote for him anyway, because, you know, I'm still a bit of a lefty. People say you get more right wing as you get older, but I don't think that's true. I think it's just a dirty rumour made up by the Jews.
I knew it was going to be a Jewish joke. I was just waiting for it. Yeah.
And it sort of, some people laughed, and I got lots of texts from Jewish people in the audience saying, can't make jokes like that if you're not Jewish. Mm. And I thought, well, why not? Because, well, you can answer, you're Jewish, kind of thing. But it seemed to me like quite a good joke. You know, someone who doesn't realise that he's become a fascist.
Yeah, no, it was quite a good joke. I imagine those Jewish people texting probably had their own kind of payback company whereby they got some money from the phone people. I imagine that's all going on. Anyway, there we are. PC has not gone mad. Thanks to all my guests. If you have a received opinion you want the panel to challenge, send it to us at heresy@bbc.co.uk, and it'll either be on the radio next week or in my bin. Good night, and remember, everything you know is wrong.